Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
As a mom, and I'm sure this will come as a huge shock, as a mom, I've had the opportunity to watch my children misbehave. I've also had the chance to watch them learn what it looks like to apologize. And what I have observed in them is that it is very hard to apologize. If you've ever watched a small child try to say, "I'm sorry," they have a hard time making eye contact. They're kind of like, "I'm sorry." It's like this hushed whisper. And it reminded me, it takes me back when I watch them to my own childhood and remembering what that felt like. And there were times, more than a handful of times, that I did something as a child or youth that left me with that acute sense of shame and guilt. And for example, I'll give you a quick example. There was one time when someone had shared something with me in confidence and I shared it, right? And when faced with my tears over the unbelievable sense of guilt I felt, my mother said something that she said often to me, which is, "Confession is good for the soul." Not Catholic, but she said, "Confession is good for the soul." And I called this friend who I had, you know, sort of spilled the beans about this thing he'd told me. And I was teary and I apologized. And I remember that, like, my heart was beating faster and it was so hard to do. And if I'd had to do it in person, it probably would have been even 10 times harder. There is something inherently vulnerable in asking for forgiveness, in making a sincere apology. It requires an intense level of trust. When Ethan, my oldest, was younger, I came across this method for apologizing that seemed to embody exactly why it's so hard to do sincerely. This method acknowledges that often our apologies, especially to siblings, are perfunctory, right? "I'm sorry, sorry, sorry," all day long. And that we aren't actually taking responsibility when we make those apologies. So this method asks the person who's caused the offense to go through four steps, and we added in our household a fifth step. The first is to say, "I'm sorry for," and then you outline what it is you did. "I'm sorry for this thing." Then you say, "That was wrong because," and it goes into, why was that wrong? Did it hurt the other person? Did it break their trust? What was the wrongness of it? Next, "In the future, I will," and you commit yourself to a changed behavior. Trust me, we don't do this every time the siblings swap hits. But for the big stuff, it's actually a useful tool. So that third piece is, "In the future, I will," and you commit yourself to trying to do differently moving forward. Then, and this is the one we added, "Right now, is there anything I can do to help?" Right? Especially good with kids when they knock over each other's towers. "Is there anything I can do to help right now?" And then finally, "Will you forgive me?" And here, this is the hardest part, I think, because this is where you acknowledge that it's up to the other person, the individual that you hurt, to determine if they are ready to forgive you, right? That's the vulnerable and hard piece. But it's also what makes the apology sincere, acknowledging that once we've made it, it's not in our hands any longer. We can't actually control whether or not the other person accepts the apology we've made. I love these 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and I love the name they're given, the Days of Awe. And inside them are the Days of Repentance, days to apologize and to seek forgiveness, to make restitution, to offer forgiveness. The Days of Repentance ask people to think deeply and truly about the wrongs they have committed and to take responsibility and do something about it. And on Yom Kippur, people are asked to stand with their heads bowed and engage in this communal prayer that basically lists from A to Z a bunch of wrongs that humans can commit against each other. You stand as one and you recite these confessions. our reading captures the litany-like aspect of these prayers, but it also captures beautifully the other side of this confession, and that's that hoped for, but out of our control, outcome of forgiveness. You are asked to stand and bow your head, consider the harm you've caused, so that you might be forgiven. That's what Philip Schultz writes. And that's that other side, that forgiveness piece. It's what I sought when I called that friend in tears. It's what my mother encouraged when she said, confession is good for the soul. It's what I hope to help my children seek when they've committed a wrong. The flip side of seeking forgiveness is being able to offer it. When I realized that my thoughts for today were heading in the direction of that piece of the offering of forgiveness, I did a little research, and I found an article on the Mayo Clinic website, of all places, about forgiveness and how important it is. And like a lot of the Mayo Clinic articles, if you've ever had reason to go down that particular internet rabbit hole, the articles are simple, the language is clear, it's basic questions. So they've got this question up there, what is forgiveness? And the answer that they give, forgiveness generally is a decision to let go of resentment and thoughts of revenge. It can help you focus on other positive parts of your life and can even lead to feelings of understanding, empathy, and compassion for the one who hurt you. Now, I want to be clear to say that I'm not up here advocating for you to forgive willy-nilly left and right. If there are serious wrongs, heinous wrongs that have been committed, it is not an easy thing to offer forgiveness. That to pretend that it would be easy would be disingenuous. The big things, the big wrongs, abuse, violence, horrible wrongs, those are for another day. Right now, what I'm talking about, because I know it's true, each of us carries resentments for small offenses, right? So-and-so didn't listen to me or interrupted me during that meeting, ignored me, didn't engage with me in the ways I wanted, or this person in congregational leadership made decisions I didn't agree with, or that minister did things I didn't like, or that friend didn't give me the kind of care that I was hoping they would. And I'm going to say, because I'm reasonably sure it's true, each of us has also committed those kinds of offenses. Insulted, ignored, intentionally or not, engaged in small meannesses that have caused others hurt and sadness. All of us need to give and get forgiveness for something. The Mayo Clinic goes on to explain that forgiveness is not about excusing the act or removing blame, but it's about achieving a measure of peace. The end result of which, they say, is healthier relationships, greater spiritual and psychological well-being, less anxiety, stress, and hostility, lower blood pressure, fewer symptoms of depression, lower risk of alcohol and substance abuse. We all want that. This article is largely talking about offering forgiveness, right? You've been offended, what do you do now? And they urge people to move toward it because you can actually be physically and mentally healthier if you can. But they also acknowledge that it's a process with steps, and the steps take time, and they're not passive, they are active. You spend time in reflecting on what forgiveness really looks like. You reflect on the particular offense and the effect it had on your life, and then you take the active step of actually offering forgiveness. For many of us, moving toward a place where we can forgive is challenging, but the benefits are enormous. The very last question answered by the article is, what if I'm the one who needs forgiveness? The very first thing they say is to honestly assess and acknowledge the wrongs you've done and how those wrongs have affected others. Consider the harms. It's basically what Yom Kippur asks you to do first. And then the article recommends, speak of your sincere sorrow or regret and specifically ask for forgiveness without excuses. You'll remember that five-step apology we just went through, it doesn't make any excuses. Nowhere in it do you explain or try to explain why you did what you did. This also takes time. Seeking forgiveness is not a quick fix to feelings of guilt or shame. We can apologize and seek forgiveness and even be offered that forgiveness, and it doesn't mean that those feelings go away. It's how many years later, and I still remember and can feel the feelings of having broken that confidence, right? The key, whether we are asking forgiveness or offering it, is to try to do it without expectation. And what I mean there is no mandatory outcome without which our anger or shame will simply be reignited. We apologize knowing that we can't control if it is accepted or on what timeline. And when we offer forgiveness proactively, actively, we have to be aware that the person we are forgiving may not have any interest in changing their behavior, right? The only actions that we can control are our own. And so this is what Yom Kippur and the days of repentance call us to. Once we make the inevitable mistakes that we as human beings are bound to make, we have to take responsibility, seek forgiveness, and forgive. Make things as right as we can between ourselves and others. We do this to achieve a sense of peace and balance and comfort inside of ourselves. When we forgive and seek forgiveness, we restore a kind of order to our souls, to our relationships with others. We achieve a peace by nurturing good relationship, and that's what good relationship looks like, being able to apologize and forgive. Forgiveness sought and given isn't easy, but it helps us to feel right in the world. Look deep, apologize, offer forgiveness, find a way to move forward. This is the ritualized yearly action of tidying the internal self. Philip Schultz brings another level of this holy day to our awareness when he writes these words. You are asked to believe in the spark of your divinity, in the purity of the words of your mouth and the memories of your heart. You are asked to believe that the morning will come and the mountain of night will fade. To believe for these few precious moments in the utter sweetness of your life. You're asked to believe in the spark of your own divinity, in the utter sweetness of your life. He doesn't say it, but I think here is a piece about forgiving ourselves. Sometimes that's the hardest part. Others might offer forgiveness long before we are ready to forgive ourselves. I still feel warm and uncomfortable whenever I think of those childhood wrongs. And I'll probably carry them forever, even though in most cases, absolution was offered by another long ago. We are humans and we will make mistakes. But our tradition tells us, too, that we are all divine, whatever that means to us. That we all carry a piece of the universe. The fundamental building blocks of humanity, whatever you want to call it, we all share in it. And we forget that often. We forget it in relation to others, certainly, when we treat them poorly or speak harshly to them. And we forget it in relation to ourselves when we continue to feel that guilt and shame. We forget that we are precious beings worth forgiving. We forget that underneath the challenges and the difficulty, we hold that spark. There's a deep love to be found that we can offer to each other and to ourselves. We can participate in this asking and offering forgiveness in many ways, and I encourage you in the days to come to consider ways you might do that in your own lives, for yourself and for others. But this morning, I'm going to ask you to join me in a ritualized version of this out of our teal hymnal. It's number 1037 in the teal hymnal. I don't know that you all have done this before. It is called We Begin Again in Love, and it is a litany of asking and offering forgiveness to ourselves and to each other. So there is a sung piece. Ron will play through the tune of the sung piece, and then there's spoken pieces. So I will speak the narrator portion, and I will gesture to you when it's time for you to do your sung piece. So let's listen to the melody of the sung piece. for remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again
for each time we have struck out in anger without just cause.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For the selfishness that sets us apart and alone.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For losing sight of our unity.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again and in love.
We forgive ourselves and each other. It's a tall order, but one we can accomplish together in community as we love and embrace each other. May it be so.